listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents What Do You Want Me to Do for You? The sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, October 21st, 2018.
Several years ago, shortly after my mother died and my older son graduated from high school, which came a month later, I signed up for a yoga meditation class. Now, having never been to something called yoga meditation, I didn't know exactly what to expect, but I knew what I was hoping for. I was hoping for a quiet, meditative space to move slowly, breathe deeply, and stretch out all my joints. I had been moving at warp speed, as one often does after the death of a beloved one. There just seemed to be so much to take care of. By the time I got to the class, I was carrying a knot of distress and tension right here, high, all across my shoulders. And I thought, if I can just get to a quiet place and find the right person to show me how, I'll be able to ease all this stress in my body. Now, I clearly didn't understand the culture of this particular class because when I entered the room 5 minutes early, all the other students were already sitting on their meditation cushions, looking very blissy. There was quiet, meditative music playing, and everyone who was not already deep in their meditation had their eyes fixed on the teacher. I turned to find a place near the door so I could escape if things got any weirder. But before I could hide, the teacher looked up and said, "Come, I have an extra cushion. You sit beside me," which was exactly the last thing I wanted. And apparently, it was the last thing the other students in the class wanted for me. Half of them sighed, as if I had just been given the most exquisite gift. Exactly the gift they themselves had been longing for. The other half looked daggers at me, because clearly I had no idea how to behave, and should certainly not have been accorded this honor. As you can probably guess, I didn't last in that class. In fact, I never went back. Not just because I was busy being so intrigued by the other students' adoration of the teacher, so I could barely meditate, but also because no actual stretching or body movement at all happened. And I knew if I tried at that moment in my life to do sitting meditation, I'd fall asleep, fall off my pillow, and really get the class talking. But what was that? That longing the students had to be the one called up to sit beside the teacher, to be the special one, the favored one. As I thought about it later, I realized that it felt embarrassing, but also familiar. I thought about all the people whose wisdom or expertise or authority I've respected, whose good opinion I've coveted. The track coach whose extreme Zen centeredness and deep kindness made every athlete on the team long to hear him say, "Well done." The New Testament professor whose energy and intelligence fairly crackled in the air. The prophetic leader of the mission trip that the former youth group kids and I took. I had the same impulse as those students in that yoga meditation class, to be close to the admired one, to be respected back, to be not just in the magical inner circle, but to prove my worth by being the one who understood the leader best of all. I was reminded of that meditation class experience and what it revealed to me about myself as I read this week's gospel lesson. Jesus and his followers are on the road, on the way to Jerusalem, and he has just told them for the third time about what lies ahead. When they get there, there will be betrayal and torture and pain and death, and after that, resurrection. Hearing this, immediately James and John step up and say, "Jesus, we want you to give us whatever we ask of you." Now, I wonder if any of you have ever received that kind of question, say from a toddler or a teenager. "Mom, Dad, Gran, please say you'll say yes." "Well, I don't know what the question is yet." "I know, but you'll say yes, right?" It was usually something like, "Can I have chocolate ice cream for breakfast?" when they were toddlers, or "Can I stay out 2 hours after my curfew for no good reason?" when they were teens. And I wonder if Jesus laughed, as I occasionally did, or rolled his eyes and sighed, as I occasionally did. The text doesn't always reveal Jesus' tone to us. All we know for sure is that he said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" Or, "What is it that you want me to do?" Or, "What do you want?" Now, as a bit of a reminder, James and John were already in Jesus' inner circle. They were, of course, part of the 12, but more than that, with Peter and Andrew, they were in that very first group of disciples called. And often, when Jesus went off to get away from the crowds and the larger group of his followers, and even from the 12, he took Peter, James, and John with him. When he went up to the mountain for the moment of transfiguration, it was Peter, James, and John who were by his side. But James and John want more. They want Jesus to promise them that they will be right beside him, one on his left and one on his right, when he is in his glory. It makes me wonder if they heard that bit about betrayal and pain and death that's coming. It made Jesus wonder, apparently, too, because he told them, "You don't know what you're asking. Can you drink my cup? Can you be baptized with my baptism?" I'm not sure what they heard in that question, because seemingly without thinking, they answered in unison, "Yes, yes, we are able." But Jesus was talking about the cup of betrayal and the baptism of death. Nevertheless, he assures them that even though they don't know yet what they are asking, that yes, they will be able. But the seats beside him, those are not his to reward. Because in the kingdom of God, power and honor are not going to work like they do in the kingdom of Rome, or in any of the other kingdoms down through human history, right up to our own political arrangement. In human governments, power is wielded for the sake of those already in power. As Barbara Brown Taylor notes, quote, "Those who have power get to make the rules and write history, but they have to keep an eye out because power is slippery, and those who do not have it are always ready to yank it out from under those who do. There are only so many head tables in the world, and the game of musical chairs never stops. No one holds power forever." But in God's kingdom, power will not be the same thing as domination. Those who have the power of a skill or an ability, those who have the power of love, will use them in service to all. But let's go back and pause a moment. Back to the question that opened this dialogue about power and sacrifice and service. Jesus said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" What do you want me to do? What do you want? He'll ask it again later in this journey when they get to Jericho and the blind beggar Bartimaeus calls out to him. He'll ask again, "What do you want me to do for you? What do you want?" This is not a question that we often think of as a religious or a spiritual question. If you are brought up in a certain time and place, in a certain kind of family, or perhaps in a certain place in the birth order, This is, in fact, a taboo question. For those of us brought up by Calvinists, this question was barely tolerable. It was certainly not a doorway to spirituality. Even the most superficial kind of wants could become perilous if they interfered with someone else getting what they wanted. There's only one turkey sandwich left, and all the rest are bologna? I don't mind. Whichever other people don't want, I'll take what's left over. That's fine with me. It bred a kind of competitive lowliness. The world can become a minefield of wanting and being forbidden to want. But as Rob Bell put it in a recent podcast, desire is in fact the engine that fuels everything. And simply wanting is not wrong. Think about how Jesus responds to James and John's request. He doesn't take them away from their desire. He does not berate them or rebuke them for having the desire to be the special ones on his left and his right. He takes them deeper into that desire to understand what it is they are asking for and what can be done about it. On the surface, they're asking to be close to power, maybe even to share that power with him. And make no mistake, James and John did think of Jesus as powerful. He was charismatic enough that they set down their nets, left their father in his boat with the hired hands, left everything and followed him. They had seen him feed a crowd with no supplies, calm the sea, cast out demons, and heal the sick. He was a powerful person to them. And they wanted to be close to that in just the same way many of us want to be close to power or authority or exceptional ability. We're drawn to it, and we want to participate in it. But what else were they asking for? What was the desire inside the desire? What was impelling them forward? As Bell points out, the answer to want or desire that feels, for whatever reason, out of bounds, is not in avoiding or repressing that desire. It's not in denying that your desire exists. It will never be about turning your heart off, but about going further into its center. It won't be about denial, but engagement. It won't be about avoidance or repressing, but going further into the center. What do you want me to do for you? What do you want? Instead of dismissing their desire or rebuking them, Jesus draws them deeper into what they were asking for. What was the desire inside their desire? Were they seeking safety, belonging, assurance of their worth? Reassurance that they wouldn't be left behind or left out? Did they need a sense of purpose? Did they want to sit close to Jesus and above the others to prove something to themselves? Did they need to make their desertion of their father and the family business make some sense in the end? What did they want? What do you want is a clarifying question. Jesus helps them see that what they've asked for may not be quite what they think they are asking for. Maybe they want safety and proximity to power. And Jesus says, "You will have the power to drink the cup of betrayal and be baptized with the baptism of suffering." They may want authority, and Jesus says, "That's the way the worldly powers do it. Among you and all of my people, in my kingdom, power is going to be found in service. You will not receive what you asked for, but the desire within your desire will be answered." Whatever that deeper desire was for James and John, I assume that it was met in the beloved community of self-giving service that Jesus described, because they stayed with him all the way to Jerusalem And after the shipwreck of the crucifixion, they remained with the other disciples to experience Christ's resurrected presence and to be part of building the church. They were able. I want to come back to this question and the power of Jesus' question next week when we read about blind Bartimaeus and his encounter with Jesus, when Jesus asks him, "What do you want?" But in the meantime, I invite you to welcome the question in your own life. See what power it might have to open up your experience. See what might happen in prayer if you imagine the divine addressing the question to you and be bold enough to answer. What do you want? Or perhaps you don't know what you want. Make that your prayer. Help me, God, to know what I want. This clarifying question can also help us in our human relationships. Have you ever been in a relationship, whether close or just, you know, somebody that you know casually in your life, but a relationship with someone who just complains? I don't mean occasionally. We all do that. We all have days when we're just out of sorts. I mean the kind of continual complaining that has become almost habitual. The person is barely aware that they're doing it. And it feels overwhelming and silencing to the hearer. Asking that person, "What do you want?" Or even, "What do you want me to do for you?" with every ounce of love you can muster, can be a way to throw them a lifeline in their distress. It doesn't mean you have to say yes to the request if you're not able or willing, but it allows the other person to clarify for themselves, and it gives them a chance to find a way to meet their want, or to go deeper into their want, to find the desire within the desire. The desire that will lead to their flourishing as a person. Jesus is asking us, too, "What do you want me to do for you? What do you want? What is your heart's desire?"
Listen, listen, listen.